Thursday, and you're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader and flying staff, Chuck Kaufman. Today, we'll be bringing you news of interest to our veterans community here in Arizona from our military news websites, as well as our veteran service organizations publications and websites, as well as the Veterans Administration from news.va.gov and other VA websites. Well, let's kick this off with an item from Stripes.com, the official website of the Stars and Stripes newspaper. And we have VA operations often hindered by employee misconduct, computer problems, program inefficiencies. This article is by Linda F. Hershey of Stars and Stripes from the 6th of February, Washington. Employee misconduct, malfunctioning computer systems, confusing policies, and program inefficiencies hamper operations at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Despite the hard work of most personnel, the VA's acting inspector general told lawmakers Thursday. In written and oral testimony, David Case testified at a House Veterans Affairs Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigations hearing that problems are unidentified but persist because of mismanagement, persistent staff vacancies, and a lack of follow-through on disciplining employees. Shortages of qualified personnel in key positions have made it difficult for VA to carry out its goals and functions. Having the right people in the right positions, committing to doing the right thing, is essential in building workforce accountability, as is instilling that sense of responsibility in new hires, Case said. He fielded questions from lawmakers about reports of VA leadership at medical centers failing to address performance problems with workers who do not carry out their responsibilities. Last Congress, this committee found countless instances where employees were not held accountable for their actions. Too many times, bureaucracy is put first and veterans come in second, committee chairwoman Representative Jen Keegans, Republican of Illinois, said at the start of the hearing. Protecting bad employees from the consequences of failing the veterans they serve is unacceptable, she said. The Restore VA Accountability Act, reintroduced by Representative Mike Bost, Republican of Illinois, who is chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, would impose tougher standards for holding leaders accountable, Kiggins said. The bill would authorize the VA to remove from civil service, demote, or suspend VA supervisors or managers according to language in the legislation. The VA is working to strengthen accountability among personnel with a focus on improving day-to-day operations at VA hospitals and clinics, said Ted Radway, acting assistant secretary in the Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection. Accountability starts long before we propose disciplinary actions, he said. The agency is developing rules and policies that better outline expectations for behavior and performance and consequences for failing to meet expectations. In fiscal 2024, the VA took 5,875 actions to remove, suspend, or demote employees for performance problems, said Tracy Thierrett, the VA's chief human capital officer. Employees are disciplined under Title V, authorities that are legally defensible, she said. We make sure the employee does not come back if we remove them, so we don't reinstate bad actors, she said. Title V refers to a section of the U.S. Code that governs VA personnel and employment. But Case suggested that ineffective policies and practices serve to undermine employee performance and the delivery of veterans' benefits and services. The Office of the Inspector General leaders have testified before this subcommittee and other congressional committees many times in the past about enhancing accountability at VA. There are several recurring themes and deficiencies that remain unchanged, he said. He outlined the need for clarity of roles and responsibilities, adequate and qualified staffing, updated computers, and other business processes, quality assurance monitoring and leadership that fosters responsibility. He said the OIG's investigation of individual hospitals and clinics offer a roadmap for improvement for all VA's hospitals and clinics. Some Democratic lawmakers pushed back. They defended the VA and its employees and said political pressure from Trump administration was making the VA a target. Representative Mark DeCano, Democrat of California, said VA employees are blamed for deficiencies as a strategy to terminate personnel and reduce the federal workforce. Representative Delia Ramirez, Democrat of Illinois, accused the Trump administration of creating chaos within the VA. Kiggins admonished the Democrat lawmakers for their comments. Partisan games have no place when veterans' lives are on the line, she said. And that's VA operations often hindered by employee misconduct, computer problems, program inefficiencies. And along that same vein, we have another article by Linda Hershey from the 11th of February. Lawmakers slam VA for rinse and repeat cycle of delays in fixing problems administering the GI Bill. Washington. Republican lawmakers blasted Department of Veterans Affairs officials for mistakes in administering the GI Bill that led to delays in rolling out its digital platform and delivering direct deposits to veterans to help pay for books and student housing. Problems in managing operations at the VA's educational services are the result of the agency prioritizing its large bureaucracy over veterans, Representative Derek Van Orden, Republican of Wisconsin, said at a hearing of House Veterans Affairs Committee subpanel on economic opportunity. We on this committee are going to make sure that every dollar allocated by the Congress goes to help a veteran and not a bureaucrat, Van Orden said Tuesday, as lawmakers examined bureaucratic barriers to administering the GI Bill during a 90-minute hearing. Established in 1944, the GI Bill helps veterans and their families cover bills for higher education and training that lead to new jobs and careers. Van Orden said the work by former VA Secretary Dennis McDonough, who left office in January to improve educational services and other programs for veterans, was undermined by a lot of career officials at the VA. The agency employs nearly 475,000 people. This is going to stop. I am excited to have a new Veterans Affairs Secretary, Van Orden said, referring to Doug Collins, an attorney, pastor, and Air Force Reserve chaplain, confirmed by the Senate last week. The VA is in the process of implementing a modernized GI Bill digital platform to make it easier for veterans to apply for and receive their benefits. A 2024 report by the VA Office of Inspector General found a lack of planning had led to delays and higher costs for the platform. Van Orden and other lawmakers also rebuked the VA for intimidating colleges and job training programs through so-called risk-based surveys conducted to ensure their compliance with federal regulations when participating in the GI Bill benefits. Some schools withdraw rather than go through the reviews, Van Orden said. Ken Smith, acting executive director for VA's Education Service, said, "The department does not try to target specific schools for the risk-based surveys, but strives to ensure veterans are receiving appropriate education and training. It's not our goal to drive schools out of the market," he said. The Defense Credit Union Council, in written testimony, urged the VA to modernize its electronic payment processing system and improve communications with financial institutions when there are direct deposit errors in the system. The council, which represents not-for-profit, member-owned financial cooperatives that provide financial counseling, direct deposit services, loan programs, and educational workshops, said the VA needs to speed up the transmission of payments for tuition assistance, books, and housing. Jason Strarick, Chief Advocacy Officer for Defense Credit Union Council, described the role of defense credit unions as helping veterans manage their benefits, including for tuition assistance, VA home loans, and disability compensation. Veterans are experiencing delays in receiving disability and GI Bill benefits when using VA direct deposit, which should make the delivery of payments go faster, he said. Smith said the VA is focused on completing the digital platform for administering benefits through the GI Bill. About half of original claims are now submitted electronically, the VA said. Nearly 75% of supplemental claims are completed online. The VA processed nearly 2 million claims in fiscal 2023, according to the VA. Van Orden also referred to a closed-door session of a House VA subcommittee hearing Monday that identified billions of dollars in waste that VA is responsible for because of inadequate planning or no planning at all. Though Van Orden did not identify the subcommittee or topic, he said the subcommittee chairman is Representative Tom Barrett, a freshman Republican lawmaker from Michigan. Barrett is the new chairman of the House VA Committee's subpanel on technology modernization. Barrett criticized the VA for IT systems that go exponentially over budget and fail to deliver. We ask questions and don't get specific answers. He described a rinse and repeat cycle that VA leaders go through after every election with new House VA committee members who raise the same concerns. The institutional members of VA wait us out, said Barrett, a 22-year Army veteran. But Smith emphasized gains the VA has made in improving educational services. I commit to you, I will work to get it right, he said, adding, he has been in his position for just 1 week. Smith said the VA is focused on making continuous improvements and leveraging technology to ensure veterans have customer experience excellence. Digital modernization efforts, launched in August 2022, enabled education claims to be submitted electronically for the first time, he said. Representative Juan Ciscomani, Republican of Arizona, asked about the VA's progress in advancing financial assistance for veterans pursuing their commercial trucking licenses and for taking information technology courses, also known as VET Tech, that will lead to jobs in high-demand fields. Transition from the military looks different for every person out there, Ciscomani said. He called on the VA to bring a sense of urgency to implementing these programs. Smith acknowledged the VA's education service needs better processes and procedures. We can look at technology as an enabler, he said. We're not there right now. We need to look at things within our control, provide reinforcement, and improve our learning curve. That's lawmakers slam VA for rinse and repeat cycle of delays in fixing problems administering the GI Bill. Our next article is from February the 7th from Stars and Stripes. House investigates secret Navy study of potential brain injuries among Top Gun pilots. This is by Allison Bath. A powerful congressional committee is probing a secret Navy program studying potential traumatic brain injuries suffered by the service's aviators, which may have led to the recent suicides of at least three Super Hornet pilots. On Thursday, Representative James Comer, chairman of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, sent a letter to Acting Secretary of the Navy, Terrence Emmert, requesting information and documents related to Project Odin's Eye, an internal service review of traumatic brain injuries potentially sustained by pilots with the Strike Fighter Tactics Instructor Program, popularly known as Top Gun. The secret project, initiated without formal approval from Navy, Medical, and Air Commands, raises additional questions about the Navy's knowledge of potential issues and whether it's acting to mitigate these issues in a comprehensive and effective manner, said Comer, a Republican from Kentucky. Comer noted that while the service's efforts to better understand the impacts of high-speed flight on the human brain are understandable, it is concerning that Navy Command may not be fully aware of the program's existence. He also informed the Navy that the committee was investigating the service's efforts to mitigate possible psychological and physiological effects inflicted on certain naval aviators and flight officers. The letter was first reported and posted Thursday by the New York Times. At issue is the impact on the brain of catapults and arresting gear typically used on aircraft carriers to rapidly accelerate or decelerate aircraft. Catapults help the F/A-18 Super Hornet fighters go from 0 to at least 190 miles per hour in seconds as they launch from the runway of an aircraft carrier. Arresting gear brings the aircraft traveling at about 150 miles per hour to a complete stop within 320 feet, also within seconds. Other fixed-wing aircraft that take off from or land on Navy carriers include the E-2 Hawkeye, the EA-18G Growler, the F-35C Lightning II, and the C-2 Greyhound. It's not clear how the gravitational forces experienced in repeated launches and landings affect the brain. The impact of G-force also is experienced by Navy aviators during missions and in combat. The Navy has publicly denied the risk of TBI for pilots, but some aviators have reported sudden and unexplained mental health problems, including insomnia, anxiety, depression, and PTSD-like symptoms, all of which can be a result of repeated subconcussive brain injuries, according to the Times report. Three former Super Hornet pilots, all in their 40s, died by suicide within months of one another in 2023 and 2024. Their family said the pilots had symptoms consistent with brain injuries, the newspaper reported separately in December. Project Odin's Eye was created in 2024 to look for brain injuries in Navy SEALs and expanded in November to include Top Gun aviators, the newspaper said. In the letter, Comer requests that the Navy schedule a briefing with committee staff no later than February 13th to better understand the extent the service has evaluated and addressed physiological and psychological injuries for naval aviators and flight officers. He also demands that the service submit all documents, communications, and drafts of Project Odin's Eye, along with research protocols, funding information, and the names of all Defense Department officials overseeing the project. The Navy also must submit all command and safety investigations from the past 10 years related to TBIs of all naval aviators and flight officers, among other requested documents and information, to be handed over to the committee by February 20th. While elite and highly trained naval aviators and flight officers understand the high-stress, high-stakes missions they will undergo to safeguard American national security, it is imperative to ensure the warfighter has full and accurate information about health risks and the tools, both mental and physical, to safeguard their health, Comer said. That's House Investigates' secret Navy study of potential brain injuries among Top Gun pilots. Our next article from Stripes.com. Combat-injured Army veteran Sam Brown tapped to lead VA's Memorial Affairs, pledges to honor veterans with dignity. This by Linda Hershey of Stars and Stripes from the 12th of February, Washington. Army veteran Sam Brown nearly gave his life for his country in 2008 when a roadside bomb detonated under the fuel tank of his military vehicle in Afghanistan. As President Donald Trump's nominee in January to be the Undersecretary for Memorial Affairs for the Department of Veterans Affairs, Brown pledged to ensure all who have served are honored with the dignity they have earned. Brown, 41, of Nevada, is a West Point graduate and former small business owner who has described how his injuries from the roadside attack and recovery from third-degree burns transformed his life and perspective in unexpected ways. I should not have survived the explosion in Afghanistan. The fact that I am alive is a testament to the purpose I still have, to serve others, Brown recalled in a first-person account published in the Cavalry Chapel magazine. Brown will have the opportunity as Undersecretary of Memorial Affairs to serve thousands of veterans and their loved ones. The Undersecretary for Memorial Affairs oversees the National Cemetery Administration, which operates and maintains 150 national cemeteries, including Arlington National Cemetery. Brown's Senate confirmation hearing has yet to be scheduled. About 4 million veterans are interred at national cemeteries dating to the Revolutionary War, according to the VA. The cemetery administration provides burial services for more than 100,000 military veterans and eligible family members each year. The role includes overseeing cemetery development, running memorial programs, and administering federal grants to states and territories. Sam understands our nation's duty to take care of veterans, their families, and survivors, said a VA spokesperson who spoke on the condition of anonymity. Sam's wounds taught him that tomorrow isn't guaranteed. His experience shaped his mindset and drove him to live a life with more meaning and purpose. Brown declined to speak about his nomination before his confirmation hearing, the spokesperson said Monday. After his nomination, Brown said on social media that he looked forward to ensure all who have served are honored with the dignity they have earned. Brown would replace Matthew Quinn, who was Undersecretary for Memorial Affairs from 2021 to 2024. Ronald Walters has served as acting undersecretary after Quinn's departure. The undersecretary also provides oversight of the Veterans Legacy Memorial Project that enables veterans to document and record their memories of military service. When Trump announced Brown's nomination, the president wrote on social media that Sam will now continue his service to our great nation at the VA, where he will work tirelessly to ensure we put America's veterans first and remember all who served. Brown is a recipient of a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star, who admits he held out hope to return to the military even after suffering severe burns and losing part of his hand in the attack in Kandahar. On September 4, 2008, a bomb set by the Taliban detonated under my armored vehicle. I found myself burning alive for nearly a minute. It should have been the end of my life. Instead, it was the beginning, Brown wrote in Cavalry Chapel magazine. His unit was responding to another Army unit that had been ambushed. Just as we entered the engagement area, everything went silent. I felt my body sink into my seat. I saw a bright, brilliant flash of orange. It filled the vehicle, and I knew we'd hit a roadside bomb, he wrote. 30% of his body was burned in the attack. Brown had a long recovery that required more than 30 surgeries. He was medically retired from the military in 2011 after 5 years of service. In 2009, he married Amy Larson, an Army First Lieutenant he met during treatment for his injuries. She was a dietitian who worked in the burn center at Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio. Brown served in the 3rd Brigade Combat Team of the 1st Infantry Division at Fort Cavazos, Texas. He said it took some time for him to accept that his injuries would keep him from returning to military service after the bandages were taken off. I felt like a leader without anyone to lead, and a servant without anyone to serve, he recalled in the magazine story. As a civilian, he sought other ways to give back and help other combat wounded veterans. Brown founded a company that provides medication to veterans whose government benefits do not cover the treatments they need. In 2022 and 2024, Brown made unsuccessful bids as a Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate in Nevada. There's nobody who gave up so much for his country, Trump said when he endorsed the candidate in 2024. In 2022, Brown was named chairman of the Nevada Faith and Freedom Coalition, a state chapter of the national nonprofit political organization, which supports criminal justice reform and combating human trafficking, among other issues. Created by the Christian Coalition founder Jack Reed, the Faith and Freedom Coalition engages 32 million evangelical Christians and Catholics, according to the organization's website. That's combat-injured Army veteran Sam Brown, tapped to lead VA's Memorial Affairs, pledges to honor veterans with dignity. As you know, we've discussed a lot about the name changes on some Army installations. Well, the news is back again. Bragg is back. Defense Secretary restores the name of Army Post in North Carolina. It's by Joseph Ditzler of Stars and Stripes from the 11th of February. Fort Liberty, the Army's largest post, is once again Fort Bragg, but without the Confederate tie. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth ordered the base renamed Monday while en route to Stuttgart, Germany, from Joint Base Andrews, Maryland, aboard an Air Force C-17 Globemaster III, according to Pentagon Chief Spokesman John Ulliott. Bragg is back, Hegseth said, after signing the order that changes the name to Fort Roland L. Bragg, according to a video on the Defense Visual Information Distribution Service. The name change refers not to Confederate General Braxton Bragg, for whom the base was named in 1918, but to PFC Roland L. Bragg, a World War II hero who earned the Silver Star and Purple Heart for his exceptional courage during the Battle of the Bulge, Ulliott said in a news release. This change underscores the installation's legacy of recognizing those who have demonstrated extraordinary service and sacrifice for the nation, the release states. Bragg, a building, mover, and sawmill operator from Sabattis, Maine, was an Army paratrooper with the 17th Airborne Division in Europe who saw considerable action during World War II and died in Nobleboro, Maine, at the age of 75 in 1999, according to his obituary on MaineMason.org. Bragg, a Mason who was captured briefly during the war by a German soldier, also a Mason, who let Bragg escape, his daughter Linda French said in the obituary. The guy said, "Hit me over the head and take off." And he did, and took off with an ambulance, French said in the obituary. Bragg drove the ambulance with other prisoners on board through enemy fire to safety. Renaming Fort Liberty to Fort Bragg represents an opportunity to honor one of the 18th Airborne Corps' own heroes, Private First Class Roland L. Bragg, who earned a Silver Star and Purple Heart for his actions during World War II, a spokesperson for the North Carolina base said. Bragg served in the 17th Airborne Division, which is part of the 18th Airborne Corps, and we're honored to have our installation in his namesake. The base was renamed Fort Liberty in 2023 after a years-long process mandated by Congress at the end of President-elect Donald Trump's first term to rid the military of ties to the Confederacy. A commission established to come up with a new name considered ways to keep Fort Bragg by honoring another soldier with the same surname. A commission established to come up with new names considered ways to keep Fort Bragg by honoring another soldier with the same surname. The commission's final report shows it looked at several alternatives, including Braxton Bragg's cousin, Union General Edward Bragg, and PFC Roland Bragg. Officials involved in the effort decided that keeping the name Fort Bragg, regardless of which Bragg, would not meet the intent of Congress, which they said in 2021. Trump promised on the campaign trail last year that he would reinstate Fort Bragg as the Army post's name and work to return Confederate-linked names to eight other southern bases changed in 2023. Stars and Stripes reporters Wyatt Olson and Corey Dickstein contributed to this report. Bragg is back. Defense Secretary restores name of Army post in North Carolina. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Remember, you can listen to the Sun Sounds of Arizona stream or programming of interest at a time of your choosing by going to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or by downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, which is available at the Apple App Store for your iPhone or iPad or the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And finally, you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Echo or Dot. We'll turn now to the Military Officer Magazine. That's the magazine of the Military Officers Association of America. For this healthy living article, gout on the rise. More people face this treatable condition. Gout, which is a form of inflammatory arthritis, tends to flare up in joints of the toes, ankles, or knees. It can turn just about every single movement into a painful event. A known health issue for King Henry VIII and Benjamin Franklin, gout is increasingly an ailment centuries later. A recent study from Harvard Medical School shows the U.S. has seen a significant rise in the incidence of gout over the past three decades. More than 9 million people in the U.S. currently have gout, according to the Alliance for Gout Awareness, www.goutalliance.org. And many people with gout do not receive treatment to prevent attacks, said Dr. Brett Dietz, a rheumatologist, clinician, and educator affiliated with University of California, San Francisco, and the San Francisco VA healthcare system. Gout is significantly more common in men than in women. Men are also more likely to encounter early onset gout. It is typical to diagnose men with gout in their 30s or older, and in women in their 50s and older, Dietz said. Racial background also seems to be a factor. Multiple medical sources report that data shows that Asian and Black Americans have a higher rate of gout than Hispanic and White Americans. Prevention and treatment. A suitable treatment plan can keep the condition in check. Dietz cited two main focus areas, prevention of gout attacks and treatment when they occur. The key to prevention is reducing the level of uric acid in your body. Excessive uric acid can lead to the formation of uric crystals around the joints. These crystals cause an inflammatory reaction, including pain and swelling. Medications that can reduce uric acid include allopurinol and febuxostat, Dietz said. Healthy diets, such as the Mediterranean diet, can also be effective, he said. Food and beverages that can increase uric acid levels include red meat, organ meat, shellfish, high fructose corn syrup, sugary drinks, and alcohol. Being overweight or obese increases the chances of developing gout. Once the attack occurs, treatment usually involves the use of anti-inflammatory medications. These can include non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, colchicine, or steroid medicines such as prednisone and possibly steroid injections. More than 50% of gout attacks start in the big toe, but they can also surface in any other joint of the body. If you have sudden pain and swelling in one or more joints, consult with your care provider. Failure to diagnose and treat gout can lead to longer and more frequent attacks. This is by Ray Kavanaugh, and he's a writer that's from Massachusetts, for this article, Gout on the Rise, and that's from the Military Officer Magazine. This is breaking news for me, recording this on Wednesday. Navy jet crashes off San Diego coast. Two crew members rescued. This is by Tara Kopp of the AP from the 12th, 1:38 p.m. U.S. Navy jet crashed Wednesday morning off the coast of San Diego, and the two crew members were rescued, authorities said. The two occupants of the EA-18G Growler were first picked up by a fishing vessel called Premier, then transferred to a nearby Customs and Border Protection vessel, said Coast Guard spokesperson Petty Officer Christopher Sappi. The crew members were taken to an area hospital, according to San Diego Fire Rescue Department, and they are in stable condition, Sappi said. The Coast Guard has two vessels now safeguarding the Growler wreckage in the San Diego Harbor, Sappi said. Further details of the crash weren't immediately available. The Growler is a two-seater that specializes in electronic warfare. That's Navy jet crashes off San Diego coast, two crew members rescued. Next, from the Military Times, we have this item. VA deems over 130 occupations ineligible for deferred resignation plan. This is by Carla K. Johnson of the Associated Press from the 7th of February. Most nurses, doctors, and other staff caring for military veterans through the Department of Veterans Affairs are not eligible for the Trump administration's deferred resignation offer, according to an email sent Friday by VA leadership to staff. Nurses had been among those who received the original offer, but their unions had discouraged them from accepting, saying an exodus would directly and immediately affect the care of its 9.1 million enrolled veterans. The new email, which was reviewed by the Associated Press, included an attached letter from VA's Human Resources Department and a spreadsheet with a list of more than 130 occupations labeled VA exemption requests. "It seems like it's almost everyone," said Mary Jean Burke, a physical therapist and American Federation of Government Employees leader. "We're trying to figure out who is eligible." The occupations the VA deemed ineligible for the offer range from laundry workers and cooks to nurses, pharmacists, and physicians. Those eligible, according to the VA's letter, include full-time probationary employees and possibly some employees who are going to retire in 2025. "People are frightened and mildly stressed about the unusualness of it all," Burke said. A VA spokesperson said the agency worked closely with the White House and the Office of Personnel Management to identify the occupations that aren't eligible for the resignation program. Exempting these occupations from the program will ensure VA continues providing mission-critical health care, benefits, and memorial services to our nation's veterans, their families, caregivers, and survivors, the spokesperson said. On Thursday, a federal judge temporarily blocked the deferred resignation program, which was orchestrated by Trump advisor Elon Musk. The judge ordered the Republican administration to extend the deadline until Monday. Nurses for the VA, the federal government's largest employer, comprise the biggest single group of federal workers, numbering more than 100,000 and accounting for 5% of all full-time permanent employees, according to an Associated Press analysis of personnel data. Associated Press writer Will Weissert in Washington contributed to this report, "VA deems over 130 occupations ineligible for deferred resignation plan." We'll turn now to our newsletter from the Phoenix VA healthcare system, Veterans News Now. Recent events: Phoenix VA takes part in stand down at Apache Junction. Phoenix VA participated in a veterans stand down hosted by the American Legion Auxiliary at Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 7968 in Apache Junction on January 25th. The stand down was put together to provide resources from more than 20 vendors to help local veterans with a variety of needs. "It's a great opportunity for us to serve our veterans in this community," said Michael Welsh, Phoenix VA Deputy Director. "We provided many resources, including eligibility and enrollment, toxic exposure screening, vaccinations, community care, and more." From the news, Carl T. Hayden VA Medical Center library is closing. "Dear veterans, families, and caregivers, we'd like to inform you about the upcoming closure of the medical patient library at the Carl T. Hayden VA Medical Center on March the 31st, 2025. For over 30 years, this library has been a place of learning, connection, and support for our veterans, providing access to valuable resources and a quiet space for healing and reflection. We sincerely appreciate your support of our library system over the years. While this chapter is coming to an end, we remain committed to ensuring our veterans have access to the information and resources they need. And you can find alternate library services, and they have a link for that. Unfortunately, it's too long to repeat in our broadcast. But if you get the newsletter from the Phoenix VA, they have this list of resources. If you have additional questions or need assistance in finding alternative library services, please contact the Veterans Resource Center at 602-277-5551, extension 2774. Thank you for your service and dedication to our healthcare system. Then, Go Red for Women with the Phoenix VA. 2025 Go Red for Women is an initiative aimed to dispel the myths and raise awareness of heart disease and stroke as the number one killer of women. The American Heart Association created Go Red for Women, a passionate, emotional, social initiative designed to empower women to take charge of their heart Health. February is American Heart Month. The Office of Women's Health, the OWH, is proud to continue collaborating with the American Heart Association to bring awareness and knowledge about heart disease and stroke. Join us to help promote heart health and keep America's women veterans strong all year. They also have a reminder, don't wait, new secure sign-in is required by March the 4th, 2025, for My Health eVet on va.gov. The My Health eVet, the MHV team at the Phoenix VA Medical Center invites veterans to attend an in-person, hands-on help session at the Phoenix VA 32nd Street Clinic, room 3A120/121. During this session, veterans will be assisted through the creation of a login.gov or ID.me account and the process to complete the identity verification, which is required to access the My Health eVet on va.gov site. And the sessions remaining February the 18th, 19th, and 20th from 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. on February 24th, 25th, 26th, and 27th, again from 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. To participate, please be sure the veteran brings a personal device, your tablet or laptop, with a camera. Wi-Fi and power will be available. A smartphone that receives text messages. A non-expired state-issued ID, a driver's license or state ID card. And veterans will also need to access their email account from their personal device or smartphone. And the following links can also help veterans find more information. And I think we've announced these links before, but here they are again, www.va.gov/initiatives/prepare-for-vas-secure-sign-in-changes or help.id.me/hc/en-us/p/contact_support. Those are pretty complicated links, and you may have a little difficulty getting it from me reading it, but those links are available in that Phoenix Healthcare newsletter, or you can go to va.gov and search for login or id.me or My Health eVet, and you should be able to find it. Login.gov Help Center is available at 1-844-845-6446. The Call My Health eVet National Help Desk is at 1-877-327-0022. And of course, the Phoenix VA MC MHV is at 602-277-5551, extension 3934. There is a Creative Arts Festival for 2025. The 19th Annual Phoenix VA Creative Arts Festival will be held on Thursday, May the 8th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Competition exhibits veterans' original artworks, writings, music, dance, and drama. The event will take place at the Carl T. Hayden VA Medical Center in the Topaz Clinic. That's at the basement level ambulatory care clinic building. The event's co-presented by the Department of Veterans Affairs and the American Legion Auxiliary. Veterans who are enrolled in the Phoenix VA healthcare system are eligible to participate. There will be an open house for easy registration on Wednesday, April the 9th, in the basement of the ACC near the Topaz Clinic from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Phone registration will be open from April the 7th through the 18th by calling 480-524-5036. The winners of the local competition will be eligible to advance to the national level and may be invited to attend the National Veterans Creative Arts Festival. Following the local competition, winners will be contacted and follow-up media will highlight the veterans' achievements and progress through the Recreation and Creative Arts Therapy programs. Each participant will receive a certificate of recognition. First place winners will receive a blue ribbon to be presented on the day of the event. Eligibility. To qualify for entry in the local Phoenix VA CAF, veterans must be an established patient with the Phoenix VA healthcare system prior to entry into the local competition. How to participate? The easiest way to enter is by attending the Creative Arts Festival open house on Wednesday, April 9th, in the basement of the ACC. Phone entries into the local Phoenix VA CAF are accepted from April the 7th through the 18th. To participate, veterans can call Phoenix VA Creative Arts Therapists at 480-524-5036. Receiving artwork in the Topaz Clinic will take place May the 5th and 6th. Veterans may enter only up to 3 items in the local event, and there's a 1 item per subcategory maximum. Information about categories and submission requirements can be found at www.creativeartsfestival. That's all one word, creativeartsfestival.va.gov. Creative arts are one of the many forms of rehabilitative treatment offered to help veterans in their recovery. There's evidence-based practice for various diagnoses seen within the Phoenix VA. Certified recreation therapists, CTRS, and creative arts music therapists focus on goals improving veterans' lives by building coping skills to address issues related to both physical and emotional distress beyond the hospital setting. The veterans participating in the festival receive recognition for their continued progress in recovery and rehabilitation. This event provides an opportunity to help them measure that progress, foster creative and emotional expression, share their stories, and connect with other veterans through shared artistic experience. Next, registration for Summer Sports Clinic is open. Registration for the National Veterans Summer Sports Clinic opens on December the 9th and runs through March the 1st, 2025. The 2025 clinic will take place August 23rd through the 30th in San Diego, offering an extended opportunity for veterans to partake in adaptive sports. Eligible veterans can apply to attend the 2025 Summer Sports Clinic. All accepted veterans will be eligible to receive a free round-trip airline ticket to attend through the generous support of Fisher House Foundation Hero Miles. The veterans event is a call for artists, legacy of service, stories, and color. Current and former service members are invited to submit works that capture the essence of the military experience or explore other themes of their choice through painting, sculpture, photography, or mixed media. If you have questions, you can contact Stacy Eastwood at ovmae@asu.edu. The submission deadline is Saturday, the 15th of February, and the opening reception is Friday, April 11th, 2025. And you register at links.asu.edu/veteran art exhibit, all one word, veteran art exhibit, and you could submit your artwork. The Office for Veteran and Military Academic Engagement in the College of Integrative Sciences and Arts extends an opportunity to ASU student veterans, alumni, and community veterans to showcase their artistic expressions and perspectives at its inaugural Legacy of Service Stories in Color Art Exhibit, a celebration of artistic talent and diverse experiences within the military and veteran community. Current and former service members are invited to submit works that capture the essence of the military experience or explore another theme of their choice through painting, sculpture, photography, or mixed media. Beginning Friday, April 11th, the exhibit will launch at ASU's Polytechnic campus in the Applied Arts Pavilion, a public space that fosters understanding, reflection, and connection among veterans, their families, and the broader community. If you'd like to participate, submit the following information in 250 words or less by Saturday, February the 15th. Share your background, what's your connection to the military or veteran community, that is, veteran, active duty, National Guard, Reserves, or ROTC cadet. Artistic vision, describe the inspiration or message behind the artwork you are submitting. The medium and technique, highlight the materials and methods used to create the piece. Please add the artwork's dimensions. One piece per submission, please. Submission deadline, Saturday, February 15th, 2025. Notification of acceptance will happen on Saturday, March the 1st. The exhibit installation is Friday, April 11th through Friday, April 18th, 2025. And the opening reception, Friday, April 11th, 2025. If you or members of your group are interested in participating, please register at links.asu.edu/veteran art exhibit. Again, that's all one word, veteran art exhibit, or feel free to reach out for additional information. And that's the news from the Phoenix VA Healthcare System newsletter, Veterans News Now. Turn now to news.va.gov for this item from February the 12th. Building America, Stepping into a Career in Construction. Zoe Nembhardt and Jonathan Arnholtz of the National Center for Construction Education and Research write this article. For transitioning veterans, the construction industry is a popular sector to find a new career. According to the United States Bureau of Labor Statistics, more than 528,000 veterans work in the construction industry. As one of America's largest and most important industries, construction provides veterans a chance to continue helping strengthen our nation. Construction is the foundation for nearly everything that happens in our communities. Hospitals, schools, churches, and all other structures are built and maintained by skilled professionals. Construction workers build roads, bridges, utilities, and other infrastructure that keeps our world running. Construction offers a fulfilling and meaningful career option for veterans seeking new ways to make an impact. From defending our nation to building it, a career in construction offers veterans a familiar environment they can thrive in. Many veterans say the coordination, work ethic, and teamwork required in construction reminds them of the military. The structure and culture these veterans experienced during their service equips them well for a construction career. I honestly and truly found that brotherhood feeling again, said Sean Ray, who served as a Navy sonar technician. After his service, Ray became a pipe fitter and is now vice president of craft workforce development at Sund Construction. There were like-minded people. They were intelligent, willing to teach me, and I kind of fell right in. Another factor that helps veterans make a successful transition to the construction industry is their technical skills. Using power tools, operating equipment, and other hands-on skills that are taught in military training can apply to construction tasks. I think that construction aligns very well with the military, Ray added. In fact, military technical training gives veterans a head start in earning industry-recognized construction credentials. The National Center for Construction Education and Research, NCCER, salutes veterans by helping create a seamless transition into the construction workforce. As the leading nonprofit construction education foundation, NCCER establishes the Hard Hat Heroes Initiative to help credential veterans interested in construction. Through Hard Hat Heroes, veterans can align their military occupation specialties with NCCER's Construction Craft Training Crosswalks, relevant military training that can be applied to equivalent construction skills allows veterans to earn free reciprocal NCCER credentials. These credentials are recognized by construction employers and can help veterans secure jobs and earn competitive wages. By acquiring these respected credentials, veterans can transition from active duty to civilian life easier. NCCER and Pearson also provide complimentary online codes for NCCER's CORE curriculum to service members. CORE helps prepare craft professionals through teaching job site safety, construction math, reading construction drawings, and other fundamental skills. Editors note the sharing of any non-VA information does not constitute an endorsement of products and services on the part of VA. Veterans should verify information with the organization offering. That article, Building America, Stepping Into a Career in Construction. Our last item is from news.va.gov. Patriots Wheelchair Team helps veterans get in the game. Help veterans build courage and exceed their goals. This is from the 11th of February by Deidre Salvas, Public Affairs Specialist at the Boston VA. VA Boston's Recreation Therapy Department, in collaboration with Adaptive Sports New England and New England Patriots Wheelchair Football Team, hosted an introductory Veterans Wheelchair Football Clinic at the Brockton VA campus. During the clinic, 17 veterans received hands-on instruction from Vernon Crawford, former New England Patriots linebacker. Assisting were members of the Patriots Wheelchair Football Team, Omar Benitez, John Brace, and Joe Lamar. Participants learned essential wheelchair football skills, including controlling a sports wheelchair, throwing a spiral, running routes, and defensive techniques. I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity to both serve our local veterans as well as spread the sport of wheelchair football throughout the area, said Sam Bernstein, coach for the Patriots Wheelchair Football Team and program manager for Adaptive Sports New England. We're very lucky to have such great friends at Brockton VA who are willing to help us host a clinic like this. Helps veterans improve their emotional and social well-being. The clinic is part of VA Boston's ongoing commitment to provide adaptive sports opportunities for veterans. The Recreation Therapy Department collaborates with local and national organizations to offer a variety of adaptive sports, including winter and summer clinics. And that is all the time that we have for this article, Patriots Wheelchair Team Helps Veterans Get in the Game. If you're interested in that, you can go to news.va.gov and look for Health or Inside Veterans Health. Well, you've been listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'd like to thank you for joining me and remind you that you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming streaming on sunsounds.org or on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app available from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. And finally, you can hear the stream on your Amazon Echo or Dot.